Hello and welcome to another episode of the Audaciousness Podcast with me, Maribel Ortega.
And me, Helen Strong. In this podcast, we showcase individuals who have either set themselves bold and audacious goals or simply do the audacious work that the world needs. And what we hope to do is inspire others to also set themselves audacious goals and do audacious work and to create a positive movement in the world.
Actually, anyone can have audacious goals, even regular people like you and me. Role models are, in fact, everywhere around us. Each and every one of us can make an impact in some way.
Thank you for joining us. We're delighted to have you with us. So if you're a regular listener to our podcast or you listened to our teaser that we published right at the beginning, then you might be surprised to find that we're publishing episode 7 in season 1. Because our original intention was to publish in seasons and that we would only have 6 episodes per season. But we found that we're having such a good time in doing what we're doing that we didn't want to take a break after all. So we're continuing right through. So this is episode 7. And yeah, we've interviewed so many people and we actually have a backlog of wonderful interviews. And we just didn't want to keep our listeners waiting. That's right, isn't it, Maribel?
I think we didn't want to keep ourselves waiting. Yes, it's so much fun that we're just going to continue and season 1 will be this year.
Yeah.
And today we have a new interesting person. Helen, tell us about our guest that we're going to hear from today.
I will, Maribel, but before I do that, I have to tell you about a message that I received from one of my contacts on LinkedIn who has been listening to our podcast. He told me that he has been enjoying the podcast. And then just last night, he sent me a message via LinkedIn with some absolutely fantastic feedback. And I just wanted to read it out to you because it just made me feel so good just to read what he wrote. So he wrote, and he was talking about the last episode that we did, the one where we interviewed Farhana Yamin. So this is what he wrote. Just listen to the podcast with Farhana. I think if my energy is ever flagging, I will just listen to it again. There was so much that was both inspiring and humbling, words I know that you both used when discussing it after the interview. Farhana made me feel like everything we do in terms of activism is valuable. It also gave me a real uplift for the work that I am doing locally here. I'm going to share this with my friends in the local Green Alliance and also others who are not on side. It'll be interesting to see what this surfaces for different people. Thanks for making this podcast. For me, and I'm sure for others, the format and the content is really hitting the mark of inspiring others to action. Thanks to both of you. All the best, John. And I just think that is some lovely feedback. So thank you very much, John. If anybody else wants to send us some feedback like that, please do.
Ah, music to my ears. Listening to that just fills up my heart with joy. Precisely because that is one of the most important reasons why we decided to start this podcast in the first place, right, Helen? To create inspiration, to create momentum, and to drive positive change in the world. So I'd love to hear more of that. If you like what we're doing, send us your opinion. If you have suggestions of how we can improve, send all of that our way. We'd love to hear that.
Exactly. So back to the guest we're going to hear from today. Her name is Vicky Arundel, and I do hope I'm pronouncing her surname correctly because I didn't check this with her. So sorry, Vicky, if I've mispronounced that. And Vicky, I met Vicky last year. She was introduced, or we were introduced to each other by a mutual friend of ours. And she's what's called a yoga therapist, which neither of us, you and I, Maribel, had heard about yoga therapy beforehand, which comes clear in the interview.
Yeah.
And it was just very interesting what she did, what her story is. And so we interviewed her. It was towards the end of 2020 and discovered what it was that she does and why she does it. And yeah, an extremely interesting interview.
Excellent. So let us listen now to our interview to Vicky Arundel, and we'll come back after around 30 minutes and talk about it. We hope you enjoy the interview.
So hi, Vicky, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I'd like to begin just by asking you to give us a brief history, a brief rundown of your life so far and what brought you to where you are now.
Oh, thank you so much, Helen. It's a real pleasure to speak to you both today. I should start maybe just by saying where I'm at now, and then maybe I can sort of trace back a little bit. So I am a yoga therapist, and I run my own yoga therapy business in Surrey in the UK, so not too far out of London. And I run a full-time business just by myself. But I came to yoga actually about 22 years ago when I was 15, so you can do the maths. I came to it actually because of an injury. Originally, I was training to be a dancer, and I had a pretty bad injury. And yoga was actually something that was recommended to me as a way of healing my knee. And it kind of started a whole new love affair that has really been in the background of my life, for really that whole time. I was working, I kind of went through uni and went through all the kind of traditional educational path, and I ended up working really through nepotism for my brother's computer games company, and I was working in video games for 7-8 years. That was a really interesting journey because, I mean, video games is not really, it wasn't my big passion or anything like that. I really mm-hmm. fell into it, but it was a small startup business, and so I got a really great, education, insight into running your own business, starting it from scratch. We got to travel the world and give public talks, and they were very successful. So it was a really exciting, fun business to be a part of. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about video games was that it's an industry where people tend to be quite passionate about what they're doing. So there's a lot of vitality in the industry and creativity, and it's very exciting and it's quite fast moving. But there were other things going on, other dynamics. One of the difficult things about that industry is you're only ever as good as the last game you've made. So they had a game that didn't sell so well. And my mom, I think, was like, well, rather than your brother having to fire you, maybe it's time to move on to something else. So I decided to leave Introversions, the name of the company. I left them in 2008, and off my mom's encouragement, decided to go and do a yoga teacher training. Because to be quite honest with you, at that point, I didn't really know what else to do. My degree had been in English. I didn't really see any obvious path with that. And I've been, as I say, working in gaming for quite a while. So it wasn't really an obvious next step. But I loved yoga, and I knew it made me feel really good. And I don't know whether I really consciously at that thought about maybe being a teacher, but it felt like it would buy me some time. So I went and did this 3-month training, and I also had a 1-year visa to go to Australia. And I decided to go to Australia and make the most of the training that I'd just done and start doing some teaching. And again, I would think I would, it's funny, I don't actually remember being massively driven to the point of thinking of being a full-time yoga teacher. But I must have been quite driven, because I remember spending a lot of time in the first few months in Australia trying to get teaching jobs and working really quite hard to get those gigs. And I was lucky. I was in a period in yoga, which is long gone now, where there was more demand for yoga than teachers. And so I got a lot of jobs very quickly and was able to build up a full-time teaching career quite quickly. And fast forward, I ended up doing my yoga therapy training in 2015, which I can talk about a bit more if that's of interest. And then moved back to the UK about 3 years ago, had to start my teaching business up from scratch again. And that has led me to this point now. So it's a funny one, because I sort of feel in some ways like I fell into it, but in other ways, yoga has, as I say, been part of my life for such a long time that maybe it was like an obvious foregone conclusion that I would end up in this place.
Yeah. Fascinating story. Thanks very much, Vicky. Can you explain what the difference is between yoga therapy and what we traditionally understand as yoga?
Yeah, it's a great question. So really, I mean, ideally, I think all yoga should be hopefully therapeutic on some level. Yoga traditionally was really taught more in this sort of one-on-one kind of model, where there would be a student and a teacher, and the teacher would impart his knowledge and apply the practices in a very personalized way to the person in front of him or her. But what happened is, as yoga has become more commercialized and, you know, perhaps more mainstream, is that we now have an experience where many, many of us will go into a class, and we can come into a yoga practice with lots of different bodies and different needs and different experiences. And we will be led through a sequence that's fairly general. And is you know, for everybody in that room. And so yoga therapy is really, I think, about going back to how yoga was originally taught, with the idea of really applying and adapting the yoga practices to that specific person in front of you. And it also, I think, looks a little bit more big picture. So yoga now tends to focus a lot on the physical practice, but we have so many other tools in yoga than just postures and movement practices. We've got breath work, we've got meditation practices, we've got relaxation techniques, we have lifestyle interventions. And so I think, you know, traditional yoga therapy really tries to bring in all of these different tools that we have, looking at the person in front of us and seeing how we can help them reach whatever goals or aspirations they have. You know, I have some clients who come to me with very specific health goals, or they might have an injury or back pain, for example, and they're using yoga really specifically to work with that condition. Or, you know, so, and mental health is a really big one too. So I have a lot of people who come to me with anxiety or depression. And so we'll take those yoga practices and really adapt them to meet the person that's right there in front of me, and so that's sort of yoga therapy in a nutshell.
Okay, I find that quite interesting. So actually, you have patients, would you call them that way? Is the connection between a yoga therapist working just one-on-one with a person different to teaching a yoga class to 20 people?
Yeah, I think the languaging is interesting. I call them clients, because patient sounds a little bit like a medical thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm not medically qualified. So I tend to, or students or clients.
Okay.
But yes, so definitely looking much more at this relationship between the therapist and the student. You know, I think a lot of the people I work with have maybe done yoga in a group class and maybe got injured or didn't feel it was for them. I've also got some students who have never done any yoga, and to be quite honest, wouldn't set foot in a yoga class if you drag them kicking and screaming, but have been told maybe by their doctor or their partner that they really should do it. So I have a lot of people who I work with who I don't think would necessarily even admit that they're doing yoga, but I think a lot of this is how you package things for people as well. So sometimes I'll just say, okay, today we're going to work on our mobility, or we're going to do some stretches, we're going to do some breath work. So we get all sorts of different people. And I think that was the thing that really drew me to yoga therapy, because I worked in yoga studio settings for a long time. And I just felt like there were people that I really wanted to access. There were people who I thought would really benefit from yoga, but just were not getting... when we're not getting the tools, they weren't getting access to it in a traditional yoga environment. And so I really wanted to work with those kinds of people, you know, where a yoga class might not be even accessible. Like, I work with people with MS and Parkinson's and cerebral palsy, and mm-hmm. they're not going to be able to benefit from some of the really dynamic group classes that are out there, but they would really benefit from yoga, but it needs to be on their terms and adapted for them.
I see at their pace. When you first started this journey, how did it feel like? Was it more like, I need to go there and I need to achieve this goal? Or did things just happen to fall into place? How did you go about to achieving this goal of becoming a yoga therapist?
I think I'm I'm quite type A. So I'm probably quite unusual maybe in that respect in the yoga industry, but I'm quite driven. So I think I did bring an element of, once I decided that I was not going to be on this path and I wanted to make yoga my career, I was quite sort of organized and fairly strategic around how I was going to make it happen. But on the other hand, I've also found that the process of getting to, you know, where I started from in the yoga journey to where I am now has actually been really organic. And maybe part of this has been like I've set up my own luck a little bit in that I have worked very hard and I've put a lot of time and effort into building up my business and building up my career and my experience and my knowledge. So there's definitely, you know, there's been a very proactive aspect to it. But I've also found that letting things build organically has just been such a big part of my journey. And an example of that is that one of people, actually recently I've been working with a couple of other yoga therapists, and they said to me, well, how have you got so many clients? And one of the things I've been really diligent about working on is building up my referral network. So building up relationships with another doctor, for example, with other health practitioners. And so a lot of my clients have come through those referral networks. And so that's been really fantastic. And actually I haven't actually had to do much marketing in the last couple of years because I've just been able to get so much work through this referral system. So I think it's been a bit of a combination for me of you know, being driven and being quite ambitious. And definitely, you know, I have my notepad with my to-do list for the day. And, you know, I'm very organized in that way, but then also allowing things to happen and progress as, you know, in their more organic and natural way.
But I think we should add, referrals only work if you're creating very good results. And seems like that's what you're doing with your clients.
I think that's, you know, and I think that's very true, is that I always remember when I did one of my trainings, they said that the best marketing is when other people do your marketing for you. In my kind of line of business, because my work is, you know, working with people and it's about developing trust and a therapeutic relationship, so much of it comes down to, yeah, other people really liking what you do and then spreading the word. I'm really conscious that certainly when I've been getting referrals from doctors, for example, I don't take those referrals lightly. Like that's a huge responsibility. This doctor has referred somebody to me, so I need to make sure that I'm good and I know what I'm doing and, you know, I'm doing a good job. One of my biggest bugbears these days is that, you know, there's so much emphasis on marketing and marketing yourself and marketing your business and marketing your job. But I sort of feel if people focused a little bit more on just getting really good at what they were doing, you wouldn't actually have to focus so much on the marketing, because the results would speak for themselves a bit more. And people, a lot of people, if they think you're good, they will do the marketing for you. And I know that doesn't apply to all areas and industries and businesses, but I think we've lost the balance a little bit. Between sort of, you know, selling yourself and also just making sure that what you're selling actually has real value. And the only way you have to offer something of real value is you've got to get really good at it. You've got to do your 10,000 hours or whatever, Malcolm Gladwell, you know, that practice and that, mastery of a craft is hugely important to me. And I think that's, you know, if you're looking to be successful in any industry, there's got to be an element of like really knuckling down and doing the hours and putting in the work to make sure that what you have to offer is valuable.
Vicky, you mentioned earlier that it was, you needed to think about the language that you use, because not everybody, for example, was happy with using the word yoga, or you had to really think about that. Were there any other obstacles that came up, and how did you deal with those?
Maybe a few. So first of all, the idea of yoga and what it looks like, what it means, everyone has their own story around it. That I definitely come up with some barriers around that. So, you know, a lot of the people that I'm working with in a therapeutic way are people 60 and over. And so their memories of yoga is like the Beatles and like the, you know, the kind of hippie stuff, and maybe that the Green Goddess on TV and you know, this sort of quite esoteric, exotic practice. or they have images of, you know, really super bendy, flexible women in bikinis on beaches. And so I think yoga has an identity problem, I think, quite significantly, not helped probably by the era of Instagram. And there are a lot of people out there doing great work to try to, you know, make yoga more accessible, to improve the image of yoga using different kinds of bodies and different kinds of people. But I think we still have a really long way to go. So I think initially for me, just getting the word out there that yoga is something for everybody and that you don't have to look a certain way or be a certain age or a certain weight to do it, to benefit from it, that's been quite challenging. If I can get people through the door and actually on the mat, and then I've kind of almost won 90% of the battle, I think, at that point, because they're ready, they're open to hopefully giving it a go. But getting people over that initial hurdle, and I think there's a lot of, it's a very vulnerable thing to lie on a yoga mat or sit on a yoga mat in front of somebody you don't know, mm-hmm. and to, you know, to show them who you are, what you can physically do, how you're breathing. These are all very intimate acts. And so that's why I think the trust is, you know, really important. But you can't build that in one session. That's something that obviously takes a bit of time. So that's been probably a bit of a barrier. And then I guess the other thing is, actually, it's not been so much of an issue now, but initially, like, working out the money side of things and, you know, what's sort of an appropriate level to charge for these services and, you know, can people afford it? Do they value it in the same way as maybe like a physiotherapy session or counseling session? You know, I was looking at other industries and what their pricing structures were like. And unfortunately, I live in quite an affluent area of the UK. So I think I've been quite lucky because there people do have a bit more disposable income. And so, you know, things like private yoga is maybe in a little bit more in people's budget. But that has been, that's been a more of a challenge, I think, to work through, to just get people to think this is something worth spending some money on. And that may be partly because yoga therapy is also very unknown in this country. You know, there's not really many of us out there doing it. Lots of people know about yoga, but they don't necessarily know about yoga therapies. So that's also been like my role, is to educate people about what it is I do.
Yeah. And what would you say then is the future of yoga and yoga therapy, or what would you like it to be if you were to create the future? What would it be?
I look at I actually look at America really in terms of what's happening there, because they are probably about 5 years ahead of us in terms of the industry. And so there's a few quite key things that are going on in America. One is that you can claim yoga therapy sessions on your private health insurance, so like you would for maybe a physio session or an osteopath session. And we're starting to see that here in the UK, actually. There is, for example, we had this social prescribing model come out, I think it was at the beginning of this year, where GPs can prescribe yoga for mental health issues, for example, and lower back pain was on there as well. So there's been some really compelling and very robust research around the benefits of yoga for mental health and for lower back pain, chronic lower back pain. So we're getting there, but I think that certainly will help me if people can claim for this sort of stuff, then that might open this up to me being able to work with more kinds of people from different backgrounds. And I think the other thing is to see more yoga in healthcare. And we're on the way, but I think it's going to take some time. In America, they now have some hospitals with yoga therapists on the faculty and the ward. And so, I'd love to see a time when we can have that. We can have yoga being taught in hospitals and, you know, really simple practices, but very powerful practices, breath work and relaxation techniques and things like that for people working with cancer or, you know, people who are in palliative care to help them with their pain management, those sorts of things. I really like to see more of that. But in order for that to happen, we need to be better regulated as an industry, and there's a long way to go with that for now. It's still early days. So we need more training and, yeah, more regulation probably. Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that that also requires a change of a mindset to seeing health as something that is holistic and not just this traditional medicine. The doctor comes and says, oh, you have a pain here in your shoulder, and then I'm going to just treat this and not the whole body. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a real desire for that now. I really do think that there's a huge amount of hunger for this sort of model of healthcare. You know, I mean, some of the biggest issues that we face, you know, the NHS, for example, is really crippled because the number of people with these non-communicable health issues that are lifestyle related, that are not fixed by, you know, a pill. One size fits all approach. Many people with these health issues have several other linked secondary health issues, and they really need to be treated in a more integrated and holistic way. And, you know, I think most people working in the health industry would agree with that. It's just how do we go about that? It's complex, it's complicated. And one of the things that I think we need to be a little bit careful with yoga therapy, actually, because I can see this could happen, is that people start creating things like, you know, a yoga sequence for back pain and a yoga sequence for obesity and a yoga sequence for it. And that's not really what this is about. This is about every person who comes through your door, whether you get 100 people with lower back pain, there could be 100 different ways that person, you know, that you would need to work with at each of those people, because one person's back pain may have more of an emotional component to it. Another person's back pain may have an ergonomic kind of desk related reason behind it. Humans, and we're very complex, and we need these more personalized approaches. But they're not popular in the really big healthcare system because they're not easy. You know, you can't sort of roll them out, and you need people who have experience and are skilled at working with complexity. That's really difficult, I think.
Well, you're the first yoga therapist that I've met. I didn't even know that existed, but I really agree with this holistic approach to healing. And I'm learning. I'm on a learning path. But Vicky, you're not only a yoga therapist, you are a very successful yoga therapist. That means you are a successful businesswoman. I would like to pick your brain a little bit about on that. What do you think? You mentioned before that you have a list of things that you need. How do you deal with all your day-to-day tasks? Are there any tricks that you want to share with us that you think are important for being successful in whatever business that you're doing?
I think I've always really been interested in productivity, because I've always been very keen to live as intentionally as I can, and to really to use my time well and to focus on the things that are really important to me. I think the biggest thing has really been for me to explore what is most valuable and important to me on any given day. You know, what are the real driving force behind what I do. So I try to make my decisions about how I spend my time and what I put on my to-do list and that driven by those deep values of like, well, what is most important to me? And I really try to set that as the bar. So one of the practices I do is I remember a piece of advice. I think maybe I read it somewhere. I can't remember, but I remember it something along the lines of the next day, really the success of the next day really depends on the planning the night before. So I do spend some time planning out my next day and maybe writing up a to-do list of the things that I want to get done. And I really love this practice because it really forces you to, first of all, think about how much time you have. And secondly, again, like, what are the priorities? What are the most important things? And to be quite honest with you, my to-do list actually most days looks very similar, because I have some really strong habits that I'm really, for me, are really important to do. So I have a movement practice that I do every day. And that movement practice might look different. I've kind of been going through a period of doing some strength training, and so it's not always a yoga practice per se, but I make an intention to have a habit of moving every day in some mindful and intentional way. Another habit that I've started this year is I go for a walk every day, mainly because during this year, I have been indoors a lot and online a lot. So really big part of my mental health, my self-care practice has been to make sure I get out. And sometimes my partner comes with me, but if I'm on my own, I try not to listen to anything as well. So I really try to use that time to let my mind wander and just let myself think. And actually often during my walks, it's when I come up with ideas and problem solving for I've got a client that I'm working with and I'm trying to figure out where I want to go with them next. A lot of that creative thinking, it happens in those walks, and I don't even really need to consciously think about it, but it just kind of bubbles up. So that's been huge for me. I've really enjoyed implementing that as a practice. And then the only other thing that's always on the to-do list every day is my meditational breath work practice. And again, that looks a little different each day, but I do some kind of contemplative or relaxation-based practice. And that's obviously hugely important for me, that I can regulate myself and my stress levels and whatnot, but also that I can show up to be as present as I possibly can, because my work really requires me to be extremely focused and present with the person when they're there. And it's quite tiring. So I really, these other practices that I've created are there to also support me in my work. So that's been massive. So having things that you do that support you in your work, so that when you show up to work, you can be the best that you can possibly be. I really tried to optimize my life to make sure that I'm on point when I'm working. This is something I've really struggled with, but actually scheduling downtime. And this is a work in progress for me. I'm not the best at it, because I love my work and I find it really difficult to switch off from it. But consciously having other things that I do that really take me out of my work head. And what I've come to realize is that for me, actually downtime, it's often better for me. It's more restorative for me if it's actually quite active. So whether it's like physically active, like I go out for the day and I go for a really long walk, or I'm a really keen cook, so I love cooking new recipes and trying new recipes, or reading a book, something that just really takes me out of my head for a little while, I think has been really, really key. Again, to support me in being the best business woman and yoga therapist that I can be, that's also been really important to make sure that I'm showing up when I need to really show up.
Yeah, fantastic tips there. Thanks very much, Vicky. I'd like to ask, obviously this is a very noble profession that you're doing, and valuable work for people, and I can feel your passion for your work coming out in this. It seems that your work is very much in alignment with your values. However, it does also seem to me like you're kind of pushing a rock up a hill at the moment and trying to get the message out there that we should be doing more of this. Is it a very lonely job? And if so, who are your role models or mentors or peers who you go to? Could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, it is. It's a lonely gig because you are pretty much your own boss. Well, obviously I'm my own boss, and also I don't up until actually this week. This is quite embarrassing, but I'll admit it's taken me so long to build a support network. And if you were a talking therapist, if you're a counselor, a psychotherapist, you would have supervision. That's a requirement of your work. In yoga therapy, we don't have that yet, really, but there are places where you can get that. You have to organize it yourself, and I have finally got around to organizing supervision. So that is very, very important to me, and I'm so glad I finally started doing it. It's a bit late. I should have done it probably a few years ago, but I'm really hoping that is going to start providing me with a little bit more emotional support and some more professional guidance and advice for some of the situations which are more challenging, some of the clients' circumstances that have been quite challenging to work with and to know how to work with those people. So that's, I think, been really key in terms of battling the loneliness. I mean, but you know, there's also wonderful things about working for yourself. My personality is I'm quite introverted, actually. So I am probably quite well suited to being a lone ranger. And I love having my own autonomy. I love being able to decide how and when I work. The only issue with that is if you are somebody who's quite driven and you don't have somebody else setting boundaries for you, it's very easy to transgress your own boundaries and then end up working too much. And so the other thing I think, going back to what I was talking about earlier, but just how boundaries I think are really important when you're running your own business, and it sort of ties in with that scheduling downtime, to have some boundaries set up around, you know, even things like use of technology and, you know, how often you're going to check your emails or how, you know, your social media feeds or whatever it might be. I think that those are really critical, because I look at this, you know, in anybody who has their own business, you know, you're looking at a long haul project here. This is like a marathon, not a sprint. And burnout is a thing. And I've definitely gone through periods of it. And I've seen many people who also run their own businesses. Quite a few of my clients run their own businesses who have really struggled with periods of burnout. And so these self-care practices and having these boundaries are really critical. If you're going to kind of go forwards for the long term, you've got to have these systems set up in place. Yeah. I don't know. Did that answer your question?
I mean, systems and people as well. Yeah, I think where you're on that track now that you've got in touch with the supervisor. But I personally think that a peer network and having colleagues around you is very, very important.
There are yoga therapists who look at, you know, people doing amazing work, and we're in the era now where we have access to those people through the internet. So you know, there's lots of opportunities for. I'm massively into online learning, and one of the other things, and again, I think probably every profession there's an element of this, but certainly for me, one of the things that stopped burnout or helped me get through periods of burnout is learning new things, staying curious and interested in what you're teaching. And I feel like if I'm getting stale, or I'm getting bored, or I'm feeling like I'm just like fogging over a bit and not really paying attention, for me that's always like a really good sign that I need to get the books out. I need to go and learn something. I need to learn a new movement practice or something that I can then teach and share. And that has always been the way to get me back on form again, I think. So again, you know, just continuing to learn.
Definitely, yeah. Good advice. This has been a fascinating conversation, Vicky. We're almost out of time, so I'd like to ask you this one final question, which I sent you in advance, and it's about the nature or the name of our podcast, Audaciousness, and to do with the ness being this solid piece of land surrounded by the water and everything that it might throw at you. I can probably guess what you're going to say from our conversation. Being a yoga therapist, what it is that gives you the grounding to continue. But maybe you could say this in your own words. What gives you the solidity to continue despite what life is throwing at you?
I think a deep faith, a belief that what I'm doing has value. And that is what's kept me going. And it's not even necessarily, I mean, again, you could relate that to maybe anything that's important. For me, it happens to be yoga. This practice has really, you know, kept me steady through some really quite ups and downs of life and some choppy periods. And it's always been the anchor to come back to. And I think because it's given me so much comfort and it's given me so much grounding, it's also really helped me to keep going in my work, offering this practice. Sometimes I wonder if I do it justice, but I just truly believe in the teachings. I just know that they have so much to offer, even on the worst days or the days where I worry if I'm not doing a good job or I'm not a good enough teacher, or, you know, I've had an argument with somebody, or, you know, I've got this practice to come back to. And just seeing the effect of something so simple, like getting somebody to connect with their belly as they breathe. You know, and if somebody's been like a chronic chest breather their whole life, that little light up moment where they realize there's a different way of being in their body, that for me makes it all worth it. And so I think it's the practice just keeps reminding me it's enough. You know, and I remember really a great teacher friend of mine who said, I remember I was going through a period where I was feeling a little burnt out and really questioning whether, you know, lots of insecurity about whether I was a good teacher or not. Mm-hmm. And she just said to me, she said, you know, Vic, it's not about you. It's about the yoga. Just teach the yoga. It's not about you. And it took all the pressure off me. Yeah. And suddenly I was like, you know, I'm just the conduit. I'm just the vehicle for sharing this knowledge. But the main thing is the yoga.
That's lovely. I guess lots of teachers also have that same problem. Am I a good teacher? And we forget, I mean, as former teachers ourselves, we forget it's not about the teaching. It's about the student and the learning. That's lovely. Thank you so much, Vicky.
Thank you very much, Vicky.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I wish you the best of luck. And I do hope that yoga therapy does become the mainstream thing that it should become.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Vicky. It was wonderful listening to your insights. Thank you. Helen, that was quite an interesting conversation. At some points, they're really deep. I definitely very much enjoyed it. And listening to that interview with Vicky again, what are the key things that you're taking away from it, Helen?
There's a few things that came up for me when I was listening to it again. I thought it was a lovely interview with Vicky. One of the things that came up was to do with the language that we use and the stories that we tell around what it is that we're doing. And Vicky mentioned in her particular field that yoga, for example, has a certain reputation, let's say, for various reasons. It could be that people assume that you have to be a certain type of person to do yoga, or even that it might be based in a religious belief, which I've heard before as well. Mm-hmm. And so people don't subscribe to it. So repackaging it, in this case, Vicky mentioned that she calls it mobility work or breath work. And that's one way to get around that. So I think that whatever your business or whatever your idea that you're trying to get over, it's very, very important to choose your language carefully and to give people a frame of reference for being able to relate to that particular idea that they've got. It's important, for example, to ask people questions first and then listen to what they're saying so that you can use their language and you know where they are. And in my opinion, this is a problem I think that a lot of industries have, but in particular for me, I think it's a problem that the environmental movement has had, you know, for the past few decades, that they've been framing it incorrectly, because we just don't relate to the fact that we're destroying the ecosystems which are supporting us and sustaining us. And instead, we've been showing pictures of polar bears swimming further and further because of melting ice sheets. And that's so far removed from where we're currently at that it just hasn't been working. So I think for me particularly, you know, this is a subject which is close to my heart, using the right language, and this is what I try to do now, try to get on a level with somebody where they can relate to the damage that we're causing to the planet and, you know, the way that we are with each other, the way that we're interacting with other people and other living species, and try to get it from that perspective using their frame of reference. I think that's so important. What do you think about that, Maribel?
I agree, Helen, especially because when you listen first, then you learn about where people are. And if you use the words that they are using, you can create an emotional connection with them. They will feel understood, listened to, meaning that you can influence them and create a better impact. This global warming is meaningless.
Yeah.
So that it creates zero action. People don't see the immediate impact that this is having already. It's here April in Germany, and we've had almost 25 degrees or I think it was on the 31st of March. And that's, again, I don't know how many times I've heard this is a record temperature, the first time since temperatures have been recorded in the past 150 years. In the last, I don't know, 5 years maybe, I hear that so often. We don't need to wait to change.
Definitely. Yeah. So what else did you get from, or what did you get from the interview with Vicky Maribel?
I really liked when she spoke about her routines, that she's a person that has, she didn't use the word strict, this is me using it, strict routines that she wants and needs to follow. I say wants and needs because she mentioned that she likes her work so much that she could like just continue working, and how that having those moments to create space for her mind to wander, for her mind to do something else that is not work, is so vital for your psychological health and well-being. This is something that since last year I am getting better at it, and also realizing how important it is, because I thought my body can do whatever I put it through, and well, it can't. We all have some boundaries that we can't do. So it's kind of like a little bit, if I were to say it in other words, it's respecting what your body and mind need so that you can do all the things that you want to do.
Yeah, and what I also found, I mean, Vicky's obviously a yoga therapist, which means that she does value, you know, her body and her mind, and she talked about meditation. But she's not the only person that we've interviewed who said that, you know, who said, I need to go for long walks, or I need to make sure that I've got a daily routine which might involve movement or exercise, or getting out into the fresh air to clear my mind. And I think it's really important to have these routines built into your day if you want to achieve audacious goals. You know, there's no way that you can do that and to disregard your body and your mind. It's just so important to keep every part of you healthy, you know, physically and psychologically, mentally, everything, in order to be able to do the audacious work that you need to do.
Totally agree. And it's a lot more fun when everything's working properly.
Definitely. Something else which came up for me was to do with the industry, because, you know, we said earlier that yoga therapy was something that we didn't know anything about at the beginning. So we learned a hell of a lot just from Vicky talking about the industry.
Yeah.
And to me, I was thinking, you know, when you're in a young industry or an unregulated industry, there's actually a lot of challenges that you face in getting recognition for what you do. And Vicky mentioned that the US is probably 5 years ahead of the UK in that game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that yoga therapy can be prescribed by GPs as a recognized form of therapy. So it's clear that government regulation or industry regulation is really important. And the world is changing so rapidly now, and new industries are appearing all the time. And it seems to me that the people involved in these new industries are forever chasing their tail, trying to stay on top of it and lobbying for changes and regulations to make their work more recognizable, to have more research done in those areas, to get more training and supervision, as what Vicky mentioned, and that people in those industries are appropriately rewarded in terms of pay and working conditions. So I thought that was really an important point that Vicky made.
Totally agree. There are a couple of professions that are not regulated as being a lawyer or engineer, doctor, because these professions have been around for so long. I assume that at the beginning they were also unregulated. Mm. And at some point, yes, well, this is the you need to go to university and these are the tests that you need to take. These professions are so young that they might just need time for that to happen and to get that recognition.
But the thing is that I feel that the world is speeding up. So the time that it took previous industries like law and engineering, like you mentioned, they probably did take a long time to get regulated, but the world is speeding up now. So everything needs to be done a lot faster. And because the world is speeding up, new professions are arising in order to deal with this new complex, more complex world. And the regulations, the legal system that we've got is still, a very old legal system that takes a long time to change. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it's like a mammoth. change is like really very, very slow in things that have to do with the government. How can we speed that up?
I guess you've just got to do the work on the, at the grassroots level, do the work done like what Vicky is doing the work, but battling at the same time in order to get the regulations changed and to get recognised. And like she says, and this leads me actually to something else that she said about the referrals and peer networks.
Mm.
It's so important to support other people in the industry that you're in and not believe yourself or not perceive yourself to be a competitor, because you're not going to change the industry if you're competing with each other all the time. You've got to coordinate your actions in order to be able to have a positive outcome.
Competition is irrelevant. There are enough clients for every kind of specialist.
Yeah.
And because everyone is so unique, you just need to find the kind of people that like that uniqueness that you offer. That thing of yoga needing supervision, I mean, for me, this, I had no idea that there was something like yoga therapy. So when I thought about yoga, I never thought about it treating medical conditions or things that I would consider medical conditions. But if you see it like that, then listening to her, it was the first time for me that I was aware she's caring for people, and as, for example, psychologists do, and you work with them in such an intimate way with problems, then you could take them away with you and just ruminate about somebody else's problem on your free time, and that's not good. So it was the first time for me to realize how important it is for her and people like her, or in jobs where they are service providers in that capacity, to be able to talk through these things so that they can create some distance between the problems that their clients are having and their own personal lives.
Definitely. And there's a lot of trust involved as well. There's trust in probably every business relationship that you have, but particularly in a relationship like this, where, Vicky mentioned that you've got somebody lying on the yoga mat in front of you. And when she receives referrals from GPs, for example, then she takes them really, really seriously. Trust is so important, I think, in an industry like this.
Yeah, that's something for me that I learned. I would have never connected yoga with intimacy.
Yeah.
And she used that word that with her client, I never had thought breathing could be intimate.
Yes.
But as she described it, I could then imagine it in my head. If she's very close and she's talking you through this and it's your own breathing, it's like, yes, I understood how very personal that is. Just the whole conversation gave me a whole new light to, first of all, what yoga is, being someone who does not know very much about it, and also learning about what yoga therapy is, which is something that I really didn't know.
It's interesting that you say, Maribel, that you don't have much experience with yoga. Mm-hmm. For the listeners here, what we do after our interview, after our interviews, is that we stay on the line and we have a little chat and we keep recording in case anything else interesting comes up in our conversation. And in this case, something very interesting did come up. So we're going to finish this episode with a short 3-minute piece, which begins with Vicky asking Maribel if she does yoga. So let's listen to this final part now.
Do you do yoga, Maribel? You mentioned you've done like a little bit of yoga or...
A little bit, but I have to say there's potential for learning more. Let's just put
it in Germany. I think in Germany they've got yoga therapy is a little bit more of a thing over there as well. I don't know, but
is it? You see, you know more than me about it here in Germany.
I did yoga in Germany for 10 years before I came to Scotland, and it was a ladies only group, and we used to do it nude. I shouldn't have said that as you were drinking your tea, should I?
In Germany, I can so see that. I love it though. They're just so much less, like, it's just a body, right? It's just like,
yeah, and whenever I had to do yoga again with clothes on, it just felt like, oh, these clothes are just so, get them off. I want my body back.
I think once you get, because nudism is a very common practice here, I would say, in Germany. And I haven't done yoga naked, but I have gone to camping sites that where everyone is naked. And at the beginning, it's really strange. And after half a day, you just stop thinking about it. Yeah. And then it's just people. Yeah. And it's just anything in the body. It's just, it's a finger, a leg, or something else.
I think we could learn a lot from that. I really do. Yeah, it's a very different approach. But I think there's a lot of liberation, hopefully, that comes with it. And more acceptance as well. I work with a lot of people who are just hate their bodies. You know, and I find, as a woman, it's very difficult. There's so much body shaming and fat shaming, and and again, in yoga, not helped by the fact that so much of yoga is advertised by, and I'm conscious that I am a white woman with blonde hair, so I kind of fit in that, like, ex-dancer, young white woman, relatively slim, sort of, I know I fit in that mold, but it's a problem when that's all that people see, and we need, and I'm really hoping that as I get more ancient, I'm hoping I'm still going to be teaching yoga at the age of like 99, like little old wizened woman, and just hopefully that will be good, and people will be like, oh, look at her, she's still doing yoga, and so we need that. We just need more types of people and more men, more people of all shapes and sizes.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of our podcast, Audaciousness. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. A huge thanks to Vicky Arundel for sharing her fascinating journey and her story about yoga therapy with us.
If you enjoyed this episode, please give it a like. If you think someone else would benefit from listening to these type of conversations, please pass it on to them, share it with your friends and family and colleagues. And if you know of any audacious people that we don't know of, or maybe it could be yourself, please get in touch with us and we'd love to speak with them.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with another audacious person and another audacious episode. See you then. Bye.